the age of hero worship and fads was not confined to the screen. For now, parades, celebrations, and ticker tape were the order of the day. The greatest of celebrations took place in May 1927. The New York Times headlined, "Lindy Does It, New York to Paris Alone Across the Atlantic Ocean." President Calvin Cooley, 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 President Calvin Cooley. 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 President Calvin Coolidge greeted him on his return.
As President of the United States, I bestow the Distinguished Flying Cross upon Colonel Charles A. Lindbergh.
I arrive in the Bourget Paris. At every gathering, at every meeting I attended, were the same words. You have seen the affection of the people of France for the people of America demonstrated to you. Take back with you this message from France and Europe to the United States of America. Well, thank you.
But the air that was to make heroes was also to make tragedies. The first woman to fly the Atlantic alone was Amelia Earhart in 1932. 5 years later, she attempted a worldwide trip.
The pilot, winging his way above the Earth at 200 miles an hour, talks by radio telephone to ground stations or to other planes in the air. He sits behind engines, the reliability of which is all but unbelievable.
With the trip half over and still somewhere over the Pacific, she was lost and never heard from again. And it was only 2 years before that another voice was for all time silenced by an air crash. But listen to Will Rogers speak to the Bankers of America and then wonder whether the voice is really silent.
Loan sharks and interest hounds. I have addressed every form of organized graft in the United States, excepting Congress. I understand you have 10,000 here. And with what you have in the various federal prisons, brings your membership up to around 30,000.
And still another great man of the century had his life snuffed out by progress and flight. The incomparable Notre Dame football coach, Newt Rockne.
There's been a lot of objection to spring football, and I object to it myself because I can see where it interferes with your necking and drinking. But your folks have written in and want you to play pretty much in the afternoon, so in the evening you'd be tired enough to stay home and study.
And as the years, through the voices of the people who make up the century, move forward and back and forward again, we wait and listen for the giants of the age, those humans to whom God has entrusted gifts not reserved for ordinary men, giants who knew no barriers, a man named Marconi who connected continents by sound.
On December the 12th, 1901, when in a haphazard receiving station, rigged up by myself at St. John's, Newfoundland, I was able to receive a succession of three clicks corresponding to the three dots of the letter S launched by a Morse key on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean.
And Thomas Edison, who stopped time for future generations by imprisoning sound on a piece of wax. He tells a joke in the year 1891.
About 25 years ago, a man from Boston who was a furniture dealer had a very bad case of liver complaint. So he went to California and started down the San Joaquin Valley with the idea of testing all the mineral springs that were in that valley. Towards the end of the valley, he came to a spring at it, and it immediately relieved him of his pain. Well, he was a very wealthy man, so he started a sanitarium, and by and by, there were people who came from all parts of the world and stayed at the sanitarium, and their liver complaint was cured and they relieved of their pain. Well, about 20 years afterwards, the man died. And at the coroner's inquest, they had to take his liver out and kill it with a club.
And many years later, another genius, Albert Einstein, speaks for the peace of the world.
We should strive not to use violence in fighting for our cause, but by non-participation in anything you believe is evil.
And then the man from India, Mahatma Gandhi.
There is an indefinable, mysterious power that pervades everything. I feel it, though I do not see it. It is this unseen power which makes itself felt and yet defies all proof.
And there were other great men of letters. In 1926, the Nobel Prize for Literature was won by George Bernard Shaw. His words upset many men of strong heart. But his attacks and sharp wit were not always pointed away from home.
A little girl came over to me. She pulled out an autograph book, and she said, "Please give me your autograph." Well, I said, "What do you want my autograph for? I'm not Mr. Lloyd George." "Oh," she said, "I know you're not Mr. Lloyd George, but my father told me to go and get your autograph."
The year was 1928, and a presidential election was taking place in America. The candidates, Herbert Hoover for the Republicans and Al Smith for the Democrats. And those listening to their radios could hear the familiar voices of Amos and Andy.
Who is the man that is running against each other this year election time? Explain that to me.
Herbert Hoover, Vesuvius Al Smith.
Herbert Hoover, Vesuvius Al Smith, huh?
Yeah.
Another thing I'm gonna ask you. I don't know if I'm going to be a Democrat or a Republican, you know it?
How did your old man vote?
Oh, my papa, you mean?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, papa used to always vote for the Democrat.
Well, then if I was in your place, I would vote for the Republican.
How come?
Because I ain't never knowed your old man to do nothing right in his life.
Hoover won, but Al Smith was still able to talk about the wonders of the nation.
This country has been so well blessed. So rich not only in its past and its present, but in its future. Well may we say as we travel about this continent that this is the greatest of all lands. This is the most glorious one in all the world.
There was at that time in New York a mayor who became internationally famous. Dapper, smiling, ever popular, Jimmy Walker.
Will be justified if there were a scintilla of doubt in my mind or yet in my heart about the honesty, about the purpose, about the truthfulness, and about the affection that went with it. If there was any doubt in my mind of my public official record as the mayor of this city, I would never have accepted your invitation.
In the second year of Hoover's administration, there occurred the day that history calls Black Thursday, the crash of the stock market. Eddie Cantor was broadcasting.
If the market takes another slump, I know thousands and thousands of married men who will have to leave their sweethearts and go back to their wives. Nowadays, when a man walks into a hotel and requests a room on the 19th floor, the clerk asks him, for sleeping or jumping.
And it was 3 years later that a new president said,
"So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself."
But now we were in the third decade of a century that had conquered air and joined continents. In 1935, Italy moved into Ethiopia, and in Great Britain, an empire mourned the beloved king.
On the coffin lies the crown, the orb, the scepter, and the insignia of the Order of the Garter. As it goes by, the king's guard lure the colors and present arms. Behind walks King Edward VIII.
But before the new king could receive his coronation...
This is London. A quarter of an hour ago, the Prime Minister came to the bar of the House and handed to the Speaker a message from His Majesty the King. I, Edward VIII of Great Britain, Ireland, and the British Dominions beyond the seas, King, Emperor of India, do hereby declare my irrevocable determination to renounce the throne for myself and for my descendants.
It was Dean, you Lazarusian leather Gunga Dean, though I've belted you and flayed you, by the living God that made you, you're a better man than I am, Gunga Dean. The words from Great Britain's first Nobel Prize winner in 1907, his name Rudyard Kipling. He died the same year as his king, George V.
We know that when all the men who do things have done them, and after all the men who say things about those doings have said them, it is only words, nothing but words that live to show the present how men worked and thought in the past.
Now the third decade of the century was coming to a close. In 1938, a British Prime Minister, Neville Chamberlain, returned from a meeting with Chancellor Adolf Hitler in the German city of Munich.
After my visits to Germany, I realized vividly how Herr Hitler feels that he must champion other Germans. He told me privately, and last night he repeated publicly, that after this Sudeten German question is settled, that is the end of Germany's territorial claims in Europe.
Listen now to this same voice. It is again Neville Chamberlain. The time, 11 months later. The place, London. The situation, German armies are moving across the Polish border after the Poles refuse to turn over the port of Danzig to the Nazis.
I am speaking to you from the cabinet room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany.
This was the beginning of World War II. Poland quickly fell, and their great president and renowned pianist, Paderewski, spoke to the world.
I know that the world's present unrest will not last forever. I am perfectly convinced that some day will come when the turmoil of war will cease and peace will be restored. But when?
And in England, a future queen spoke.
I can truthfully say to you all that we children at home are full of cheerfulness and courage. We are trying to do all we can to help our gallant sailors, soldiers, and airmen. And when peace comes, remember, it will be for us, the children of today, to make the world of tomorrow a better and happier place. My sister is by my side, and we are both going to say good night to you. Come on, Margaret. Good night, children. Good night, and good luck to you all.
And back in the United States, a president made a promise.
I repeat again that I stand on the platform of our party. We will not participate in foreign wars, and we will not send our army, naval or air forces to fight in foreign lands outside of the Americas, except in case of attack.
Great heroes spoke. Charles Lindbergh.
We have divided our own people by this dabbling in Europe's wars. While we should have been concentrating on American defense, we have been forced to argue over foreign quarrels. We must turn our eyes and our faith back to our own country before it is too late.
In November 1941, Japanese Ambassador Nomura was in Washington.
You all know how difficult my mission is, but I'll do all I can to make it a successful one for the sake of two countries, Japan and the United States.
But on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, radio programs throughout the United States were interrupted.
It's a long one down to around the 3-yard line. Ward Cuff takes it. He's cutting up to his left. He's over the 10. Nice block there by Lehman. Cuff's still going. He's up to the 25. And now he's hit and hit hard about the 27-yard line. Bruiser Kennard made the tackle.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Stay tuned to WOR for further developments, which will be broadcast immediately as received.
And the next day, President Roosevelt spoke to a joint session of Congress.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
And then there came the words, words from the lips of men which would stir nations. Suppressed peoples from all over the world would listen, and the words would be signposts on a long road back. The President of the United States.
With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God.
The British Prime Minister.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty. So bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
A heavyweight boxing champion.
I'm only doing what any red-blood American would do. We're going to do our part and we will win. Because we are on God's side.
A general of the armies.
I have seen the American proved on battlefields of Africa and Europe, over which armies have been fighting for more than 2,000 years of recorded history. None of those battlefields has seen a more worthy soldier than the trained American.
And a king announced the end of a great war.
For Germany, the enemy who drove all Europe into war, has been finally overcome.
A ceremony on the battleship Missouri.
The issues involving divergent ideals and ideologies have been determined on the battlefields of the world, and hence are not for our discussion or debate. It is my earnest hope, and indeed the hope of all mankind, that from this solemn occasion, a better world shall emerge out of the blood and carnage of the past.
The wife of the wartime president.
My husband would want me to say to you, the soldiers of this country of battle, that he is grateful to each and every one of you.
And with the war over and the countries of the world determined not to make the same mistakes as before, there came new words and also another war in a place called Korea. And one of the great heroes of the past would be relieved of his command.
The world has turned over many times since I took the oath on the plane at West Point, and the hopes and dreams have long since vanished. But I still remember the refrain of one of the most popular barrack ballads of that day, which proclaimed most proudly that old soldiers never die. They just fade away. And like the old soldier of that ballad, I now close my military career and just fade away.
In February 1952, King George VI of Great Britain died. Everything that is great and traditional with a monarchy that extends beyond the seas is found in the voice of Winston Churchill, the man who symbolizes the greatness of the past and the hopes of the future. He spoke of his friend the King.
I, whose youth was passed in the august, unchallenged, and tranquil glories of the Victorian era, may well feel a thrill in invoking once more the prayer and the anthem. God save the Queen.
General Eisenhower ran for President of the United States in 1952. The vice presidential candidate was Richard Nixon. The campaign was a bitter one. Nixon spoke to America.
Pat and I have the satisfaction that every dime that we've got is honestly ours. I should say this, that Pat doesn't have a mink coat, but she does have a respectable Republican cloth coat. And I always tell her that she'd look good in anything.
During President Eisenhower's first administration, there was a great congressional investigation. A senator of the United States, Joseph McCarthy.
I know all about these memoranda, these documents. Mrs. Driscoll does. She's testified under oath. And if Mr. Welch, and I know he's a very, very clever little lawyer, if he wants to try and tell the American people that he knows something about these documents that will indicate they are not genuine, then he should raise his right hand, go down here on the witness stand, and tell us why he dares accuse this young lady of perjury, and that's what he's doing. Mr. Chairman, he should be required to do that. I'm getting awfully sick away down deep inside at these innuendos.
A lawyer from Boston, Joseph Welch.
Little did I dream you could be so reckless and so cruel as to do an injury to that lad. It is, I regret to say, equally true that I fear he shall always bear a scar needlessly inflicted by you. If it were in my power to forgive you for your reckless cruelty, I would do so. I like to think I'm a gentleman, but your forgiveness will have to come from someone other than me.
In 1956, the Supreme Court declared that segregated schools were unconstitutional. Almost 100 years before, a president spoke at Gettysburg the words, "A new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal." Perhaps the strongest voice in the fight for the equality of his people is a name out of the history books, the great Negro educator Booker T. Washington. The year is 1912.
Mr. President and gentlemen of the Board of Directors and citizens, one-third of the population of the South is of the Negro race. No enterprise seeking the material, civil, or moral welfare of this section can disregard this element of our population and reach the highest success.
In 1939, the Catholics throughout the world hailed a new pope, Pope Pius XII. Before he would die in 1958, every race and religion of the world would pay honor to a great man of peace. Papa is dead. Papa means pope. His voice lives on.
Almighty and eternal God, with our whole soul, we thank thee for the great gift. Heavenly Father, thou who seest all things, who searchest and dost guide the hearts of men, make them responsive in this time of grace and salvation to the voice of thy Son.
And so the sounds and the voices move on. They are life as it happens. And what is life? It is a play, says George M. Cohan.
I am the audience. And if I may say so, I'm a highly intellectual audience. I recognize the spiritual hand of a great director, a master dramatist, who has so skillfully staged this tightly woven, disconnected spectacle of tragic nonsense. And so I am amused, and I laugh, and I applaud. And if I am any critic, this is a very good play. One of these days, I hope to meet the author and to compliment him for his marvelous entertainment.
And those many years ago, before this universe was created, there was no sound and there were no voices, and the earth was still. And the progress of this earth as we know it is left for us in pictures, and they tell us what there was. These pictures tell us of the courage and the strength and of the life, but they leave us with an emptiness. What did the great Caesar sound like, and Napoleon, and Abraham Lincoln? And so for the future generations, we enlarge this sound record of the 20th century with a picture and a sound. A picture of strength and courage, unbelievable, majestic. Her name, Helen Keller. Without the knowledge of the wonders that are life, she sees with her hands, and she speaks perhaps as men did when God first created life.
I hope that everyone listening today will help the fight to conserve eyesight.
I hope that everyone listening today will help fight to conserve eyesight.
Be a friend to those who will never see the light of the day. Be good to them always.
Be a friend to those who will never see the light of the day. Be good to them always.
So the voices and sounds move on, and they are history as it happens. They are remembrances for future generations, and all too quickly the future becomes the present and soon the past. And we who listen will one day be listened to, and the voices will tell the future generations of what there was. So we end this sound record of the men, women, and events that have made the century, the living sound record of the greatness as it happened.